The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Welcome to the Free Library of Philadelphia. My name is Laura Kovacs, and I'm honored to be here this evening to introduce Sonia Sanchez. A poet, teacher, mentor, activist, and revered Philadelphian, Sister Sanchez was named our city's first poet laureate in December. She has unlocked minds and ignited revolutions by carefully placing millions of words into poems, plays, speeches, and more than 16 books. And her list of honors is as long as her list of publications and includes the 1985 American Book Award for Homegirls and Hand Grenades. Of course, Maya Angelou said it much better than I can when she said, "This world is a better place because of Sonia Sanchez. More livable, more laughable, more manageable. I wish millions of people knew that some of the joy in their lives comes from the fact that Sonia Sanchez is writing poetry." Ladies and gentlemen, Sonia Sanchez and Odine Pope.
I guess they can't move that, right? Hi, how you doing? Thank you for coming out tonight. And so you got a great surprise. You got the great Odine Pope. I'm always amazed by and with this man's genius. Philadelphia has just turned out so many great, 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 great musicians, you know, and sometimes they don't even know they got them. But the joy about doing gigs in a place called Philadelphia or any place, New York, wherever, that Odine and I have both gone out together on this road. And we've gone places together and played together and read poetry together. So it is an honor to have you here tonight. Odine Pope. For those of you who know who follow me, you know, we got 30 minutes because there is a Q&A and there's also a book signing. So what we're going to do is begin by reading from a book called Does Your House Have Lions, a book that I did for my brother and my father, and a book that is about my brother who died of AIDS, and with his death, how it, in a sense, brought the family back together again. But when my brother first came north from a place called Alabama, he came not to love his family, but to destroy his family. And so what I do with the sister's voice is that I talk about my brother coming at 17 to New York City in a green suit. And when I saw the green suit, I said, if I do nothing else, I must get him out of that green suit. Right. And so this is sister's voice. This was a migration, unlike the 1900s of black men and women coming north for jobs, freedom, life. This was a migration to begin to bend a father's heart again, to birth seduction from the past, to repay desertion at last. Imagine him short and black, thin mustache, draping thin lips. Imagine him country and exact, thin body, underfed hips, watching at this corral of battleships, ambassadors watching for forget and remember, dancing his pirouette. And he came, my brother, at 17, recruited by birthright and smell, grabbing the city by the root with clean metallic teeth, commandant and infidel, pirating his family in their cell, and we waited for the anger to retreat, and we watched him embrace the city and the street. First, he auctioned off his legs, eyes, heart, in rooms of specific pain. He specialized in generalized, learned New Yorkese and all profane, enslaved his body to cocaine, denied his father's signature, damned his sister's overture. And a new geography greeted him, the Atlantic, drifted from offshore to lick his wounds, to give him slim transfusion as he turned, changed war, a new waistcoat of solicitor, antidote to his southern skin, ammunition for a young paladin. And the bars, the glitter, the light, discharging pain from his bygone anguish of young black boys scared of the night, sequestered on this new bank. He surveyed the fish, sweet cargoes, crowded with scales, feverish with quick sails, full sails of flesh, searing the coastline of his acquiesce. And the days, rummaging his eyes, and the days, rummaging his eyes, and the nights, flickering through a slit of narrow bars, hips, thighs, and his thoughts, labeling him misfit as he prowled, pranced in the starlit city, coloring his days and nights with gluttony and praise, and unreconciled rights with gluttony, and praise, and unreconciled rights. My brother coming north at night at 17, my brother coming not to love his family, my brother who will come and try to almost destroy a family. But in this book, there are four parts, and the third part is my father's voice, and my father who is trying to reconcile with his son, which means the whole family would be kind of reconciled. And so my father would talk about my brother who came to my house on the weekends, every weekend, and each time he came in, he damned our father. And so he would tell this story about how he begins to try to breach that. This is the father's voice. He traveled to my daughter's house. It was June. He cursed me with his morning nod of anger as he filtered his callous walk, skip, hop, feet, slipshod from 125th Street bars, face curled with odd reflections. The skin of a father is accented in the sentence of the unaccented. Was a southern Negro man playing music, married to a high yellow woman who loved my unhurt face, who slept with me in Nordic beauty. I, prisoner since my birth to fear, I, unfashioned, buried in an open grave of mornings, unclapped with constant sight of masters, fattened, decked with my diminished light. This love, this first wife of mine died in childbirth. This face of complex lace exiled her breath into another design, and I died, became wanderlust, demanded recompense from friends for my heartbreak, cursed the land for this new heartache, put her away with a youthful pause, never call her name again, wrap my heart in gauze. became Romeo bound, applauded women as I squeezed their syrup, drank their stencil face, danced between their legs, placed my swollen shank to the world, became man distilled, early 20th century black man fossil, fulfilled by women things for closing on my life. Mother, where do I go before I arrive? She wasn't as beautiful as my first wife, this ruby-colored girl insinuating her limb against my thigh, positioning her wild life, her non-virginal spell as virginal, her climb towards me with slow walking heels made me limp, made me stumble, made my legs squint until I stopped, stepped inside her footprint. I did not want to leave you, son. This flame, this pecan-colored festival requested me, not my child, your sister. Your mother could not frame herself as her mother, and I, absentee father, and I, nightclub owner carefree, did not heed her blood, did not see my girl's eyes shaved buckle down with southern thighs. Now, my 78 years urge me on your land. Now, my 78 years urge me on your land. Now, my predator legs pray, broadcast no new nightmares. No longer birdman of cornerstone comes. I come to collapse the past while bonfires burn up your orphan's mass. I sing a dirge of lost black southern manhood. This Harlem man begging pardon, secreting, oh, this Harlem man. Begging pardon, secreting old, 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 old. Yeah. The next poem I want to do is a poem called Peace. It's a poem I did in a place called Hartford, Connecticut, when I went up to Trinity College. Some years ago, they gave me an honorary degree, and when they do that, you always go back for, like, nothing, practically, right, to teach these high school students. And I had about 30 students strong on that campus, and at the end of a very intense three-hour first day, we got in a circle to join hands, and this young 70-year-old white student said, Professor Sanchez, I want to tell you what happened to me. I feel so safe and warm in here and secure. And he said, I turned to my teacher 2 weeks ago and asked him, could we have a conversation about peace? And my teacher called me a terrorist. And he was furious. You could still feel it because he was crying, and a 70-year-old male crying in front of a group of 29 other students, and we all held his tears. What was so significant is that Friday he read a most magnificent poem at Trinity College, and everyone stood up and gave him a standing ovation. And that teacher was saved, if you understand that. I hope that he understood that finally. But this is a piece called Peace. Peace, what is it? Is it an animal, a bird, a plane, a mineral, a color, a drumbeat? Is it a verb, a noun, an adjective, a prophet with no pockets circling our paragraph lives? Du Bois said the cause of war is the preparation of war. Du Bois said the cause of war is the preparation of war. I say the cause of peace must be the preparation of peace. I say the cause of peace must be the preparation of peace. Shall I prepare a table of peace before you in the presence of my enemies? Shall I prepare a table of peace where you know how to eat at this table? Where are the forks of peace? Where are the knives of peace? Where are the spoons of peace? Where are the eyes of peace? Where are the hands of peace? Where are the tongues of peace? Where are the children of peace? Peace, 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 peace. Is peace an action, a way of life? Is it a tension in our earth body? Is peace you and I seeing beyond bombs and babies roasting on the country road? Peace must not be still. We have to take it on the road, marching against Pentagon doors, lurking in obscenity. Peace must not find us on our knees while the country holds hostage the hearts and penises of the workers. Can you say peace? Can you resurrect peace? Can you house the language of peace? Can you write a sermon of peace? Can you populate the chords of peace? A long time ago, someone said, I think, therefore I am. A long time ago, someone said, I think, therefore I am. Now we say preemptive strikes, therefore we are. Now we say preemptive strikes, therefore we are. Can you rise up at the sound of peace? Can you make peace lighter than air? Can you make peace sing like butterflies until peace becomes the noise of the planet? Until peace becomes the noise of the planet. Peace. I know, as MLK knew, that the universe is curved ultimately towards justice and peace. I know, as MLK knew, that the universe is curved ultimately towards justice and peace. For war is the sanction of failure. For war is the sanction of failure. Martin said a riot is the language of the unheard, and I say a terrorist bomb is the language of the unheard. How to make the unheard hurt without blowing themselves and the world up? How to make the unheard hurt without blowing themselves and the world up? Mos Def says, speech is my hammer, bang my world into shape, now let it fall. I say, peace is my hammer, bang my world into peace, and let it fall on the eyes of the children. Where are the forks of peace? Where are the knives of peace? Where are the spoons of peace? Where are the eyes of peace? Where are the hands of peace? Where are the tongues of peace? Where are the children of peace? Where are you? You, 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 where are you, you, where are you, where are you, where are you, where are you, 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 great musician Max Roach. Odine used to travel the world with Max Roach. And Max, when Max died, oh, jeez.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Papa Joe.
Papa Joe?
Yeah, Papa Joe.
I know. When Max died, the family asked me, would I write something for him? And I did 10 haiku for Brother Max. And the last one is inscribed on his tombstone. If you ever have time, you know how people go and see the great writers, whatever, where there's a cemetery called Woodlawn Cemetery, 30 minutes from 135th Street in Harlem, people. And you should go up there to that cemetery, and you will find the great Duke Ellington, and Miles. In fact, before Miles died, Miles said, I want to be buried right next to Duke, you know. And Miles was cool to the end because he's next to the Duke, you know. Only Miles could figure that one out, even in death. And a bunch of people along with the great Max Roach. And so I did 10 haiku for Max Roach. Nothing ends. Every blade of grass remembering your sound. Your sounds exploding in the universe return to earth in prayer. As you drum, your hands kept reaching for God, 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 God. The morning sky so lovely imitates your laughter. You came, warrior, clear your music kissing our spines. Feet tapping, singing, impeach our blood. You You came drumming sweet life on sails of flesh. Your fast beat riding the air settles in our bones. Your drums soloing our breaths until the beat unbeat, until the beat unbeat, until the beat unbeat. Your hands shimmering on the legs of rain. Your hands, your hands. Shimmering, 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 shimmering. On the legs of rain, on the legs of rain, on the legs of rain, on the legs of rain. Your hands shimmering, 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 shimmering on the legs of rain. From Max Roach. And I did, some years ago, a poem for a 17-year-old who died. And in the midst of all of the talk about this young man who was killed, Trayvon Martin, the poem I did was for a 17-year-old. And I just want us never to, in the midst of activism, forget the beauty of a life even at 17 years of age. I hope I'm making sense, because sometimes in the midst of things we forget the great beauty of life. That I wrote once, at the moment of birth is death, you know, and we can't ignore that. I mean, we try to, right? One thing we know, we're not getting out of here alive. However, while we are here, if it's 17 years, I look at that young man's face and I see the beauty in his face. I understand the activism around it. We have to do that. But also I understand there are so many more Trayvons, you know, be they black, brown, white, green, purple. So let's also think sometimes about the beauty of a 17-year-old male. And so this poem is called A Poem of Praise. Man is an alien in this world in spite of all the pleasures. Man is an early traveler who tastes in himself the world. When you wake up in the morning, man, meditate on your beginning. Meditate as you flow in the waters of your birth. Meditate on the 9 months you rest unseen, and the world awaits you when you come soiled and crying. And they pick you up like one small melon and hush up your crying. At first, you do not speak, and your legs are like orphans. At first, your two eyes cross themselves in confusion. At first, your mouth knows only the full breasts of milk, a sweet taste of this world. There is nothing which does not come to an end, and to live. One year in the sight of God. You were born worthy of praise. All things that he makes are worthy of praise. In your days made up of dreams, in your eyes made of dawn, you walk towards old age, child of the rainbow, child of beauty, through the broad fields, and your eyes gain power. And your limbs grew long like yellow corn, an abundance of life, an abundance of joy.
with beauty before you. You walk towards old age. There is nothing which does not come to an end, and to live 7 years is good in the sight of God. Silently to life, you spoke, young male child. You praise life, coming as a river between hills, and your laughter was like red berries in summer, and your shouting like giant eagles. As you walk towards old age, young male child, your voice harnessed the wind. There is nothing which does not come to an end, and to live 14 years is good in the sight of God. Father, behold me in a sacred manner. Mother, behold me in a sacred manner. My family sitting holy, behold me in a sacred manner. For I am man, and I must run with the evening tide, must hold up my hands, for my life is opening before me. I am going to walk far to the east. I hope to find a good morning somewhere. I am going to race my own voice. I hope to have peace somewhere. Father, mother, behold me now. I have moved to a house of darkness, but your memories of me light my way. I do not cry, for I am man, no longer a child of your womb. There is nothing which does not come to an end, and to live 17 years is good in the sight of God. And to live 17 years is good in the sight of God. God, God, God.
Okay, I'll see you later.
Thank you, my dear brother.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so very much. I've had a thank you. So I just had to have a conversation with death this week, because from Luis Rivera, the poet, Elizabeth Alexander's husband died. The poet, the great poet out of California. Come on, someone should know her. Who? Audrin Rich. The great Audrin Rich died. And she died right before I went on stage, and someone told me, and I got up and said, hey, everybody, a great poet. When a poet dies, everything needs to stop, people. I mean, everything should stop. I know, you novelists sitting out there say, yeah, is that so? But when a poet dies, everything should stop for a minute, Just stop it. Because a poet has died. You understand? A poet has died. And Elizabeth Cowden was my sister, my mother, my friend, that every summer I went to Cuernavaca. And she said, come on. And I'd get there and brush away all the stuff, the debris that you accumulate when you go out on the road or you walk the streets of Philadelphia, or New York, wherever. And you go. And I know intellectually, I say to you at the moment of birth is death. But when you have known someone for so very long, and they make transition, you wake up the next morning and you say simply, how do I greet this day without her? But you go on and you work.
because the kind of work that Elizabeth did for so many years is some of the most brilliant work on the planet Earth. So Google her, all you computer people, iPhone people, you know, forever, go Google her. Because if you don't know her, you're missing something. Also, this great woman, Elizabeth Catlett, C-A, Catlett, C-A-T-L-E-T-T. But anyway, so sorry. So any questions, any comments? So I went around, you know, and said simply, come on, Death, you need to go someplace else. We've had enough, you know, right? All these artists, all these great poets, all these great sculptors, you know, great writers, you know, people who make this life bearable. Anyone have a tissue? Thank you. But one of the things, you know, before the, I guess, question, that one of the things I'm doing here in, excuse me. Is that we're doing a mural for peace. Did you know that? People wanted to do a mural, and I said, come on, why don't we do a peace mural? Someone said to me here in Philadelphia, you'll never have peace, Professor Sanchez. I love the mumblings of politicians. You know? There is no way to peace, Gandhi said, but peace is the way. You know, and if you begin it in your hearts, and when I do with your children and your grandchildren, when I go and teach them in these schools, when they let me in, sometimes they don't let me in, when I go in, I teach peace. You can teach war, you can teach peace, right? Oh, yeah, you better believe it, you know. And I teach them exercise, but I teach them how to breathe from here instead of here. Instead of here, and instead of here, and here. They cough the first time because they're unaccustomed to breathing from here. Isn't that amazing? And when they get over the coughing and they start breathing, they become peaceful. You don't need to give them pills, people, you know, to keep them down. Or, you know, they're so excited. Teach them how to breathe. You teach them how to breathe. You teach them life, not death. Life. And our children need to be taught life instead of death. Because they're taught death left and right with the idiot box constantly, you know. And so you teach them life, and you teach them exercises where they listen to each other's heartbeat. Let me tell you about that. And quite often, you know, you get the stray young brother who comes up and you say, put your hand on my heart. And he begins to put his hand here, and he sees the breast, and he gets nervous, you know. And you say, it's only a breast. It's not porno. They fall out on porno, you know. Gosh, these kids know porno, like left and right, right? Oof, you know. And you make them listen to the heartbeat. When you get a class, listen to each other's heartbeat, my brothers and my sisters. You got them. They see a human being, not a posse member, not someone to mess over. They see a human being because the heartbeat goes around that class. You know, so you put your right hand, right, on the student's heart. He puts his right hand here, and then I cover with my hand. And then by that time, the class is really noisy because these kids, you know, they're noisy. So you say, shut up. Keep quiet. Listen to each other's heartbeat. And for a minute, it's still a little noisy. The fuzzy is a fuzzy noise. Then it settles in, and then all of a sudden they look up, and then they look. And they see a human being, you know, a human being, you know, not just somebody in the class, a human being. And we don't let our children recognize people, human beings. We don't even tell them people are human anymore, you know. And then you do that, you got a class. You can teach them anything. They'll listen to anything. Believe me when I tell you, you know, you got to take chances with these children in schools. You know, but above all, you got to teach them, really, that that's a human being sitting next to them. That's real. So we said that. So I call people I know. I call Sister Maya and Sister Alice and Sister Tony. And I said, would you send me 3 lines of peace? And they did it just like that, because they understand the need for peace. So on the mirror will be Toni Morrison and Maya Angelou and Alice Walker's lines of peace. So I was in New York and it's the anniversary of Marvin Gaye's What's Going On. I think it's the 50th anniversary, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Can't be 50.
Yes, it is. You're getting old. Well, it's pretty close. It's close to 50. And Carmen was there. So he comes and, I'm so tall, he throws me up. And coming down, I look him in the eye. Coming down, I can only look him in the eye. I said, would you send a rap on peace? He said, okay, and he sent a rap on peace. Talib, a rap on peace. Then Brother Odin did chords of peace. And Christopher McBride did chords of peace. So it's going to not only be the poetry and the brother painting that, right? But rap, cross-generational rap, poetry, right? And music. It's about peace. So what does that mean? We mean we're asking you in the city of Philadelphia, and then we've been asked now to go to other cities to help them do a mural of peace. This is Philadelphia coming out of the mural arts. You know? So I'm asking you to put on the sleeves of peace. Put on the sleeves of peace. Put on the hands of peace. Put on the mouths of peace and the eyes of peace. Right? Put on the kneecaps of peace and the toe jam of peace. Put on the legs of peace. Put on the arms of peace. Put on the intellect of peace. Peace has intellect, people. Put on the intellect of peace. Come on. So every day, my sisters and my brothers, don't talk about each other. Don't teach your children, how to talk against people. Because if you teach them how to talk against somebody, you're teaching them how to fight. If you teach them how to fight, you're teaching them how to kill. So get off the phone with talking against people. When someone wants to say something about someone, I would say simply, hey, why don't we go see that person and see what she really is saying? Maybe we got it wrong. Because we have taught our children, we cannot deny, these are our children. Most people want to deny, those aren't our kids, my kids in jail. No. Those are your children, too. We have raised them. These are our children, and we need to, in a sense, help them. So if any of you, their bookmarks, when you go out, you want to send some peace haiku, we're putting it online at Mural Arts, and we also are doing a book with peace haiku, because I said peace is a haiku song. That's what it is, So please contribute, all right. Make your heart a little peaceful. Take a deep breath in the morning. I did a workshop up in New York last week, and, I gave them all little books and said, every morning, get up and write a haiku. That's my morning meditation. I have it right by the bed. My morning meditation besides, doing sometimes a chat, I write a haiku. That is my morning meditation. The haiku is a peaceful form. There is no greed or fat in a haiku. There is no hatred in a haiku. There is no kill in a haiku, by the way. And when you write it, you already position yourself for a day of peace. I hope you hear that. If you hear no poem at all, remember that. Because we will not survive this century if we don't begin to discuss seriously the idea of peace. And our children will not have to fall on the ground dead and say, oh, this is Korea, this is Vietnam, this is Afghanistan, this is Iraq. Because we don't teach geography in America, so they don't know it any other way until they die. That's hard but true. When the war started, I pulled down a map in school and said, tell me where those soldiers are going to. No one could find Iraq. That's real. That's not make-believe. Any questions? Someone was standing up. Yes. Say your name, please.
My name is Darnell.
How you doing, Brother Darnell?
Thanks. I'm still alive at best. Mm-hmm. My personal politics are extremely urban, but I see Rush Limbaugh as a great poet. okay? And within that spectrum of my urban politics and the beauty of Rush Limbaugh's poetry, you know, I even see, like, buy one, get one free, okay? So in light of that spectrum, and in your position as Poet Laureate of Philadelphia, okay, do you have any plans on enhancing the appreciation in children and adults, the appreciation of poetry that exists in Buy One, Get One Free, the poetry that exists in Rush Limbaugh, the poetry that exists in you, you know? So I'm just saying, from a universal perspective, are there any plans to use your office as Poet Laureate? My primary concern, are there any plans to use your poetry as Poet Laureate to enhance the appreciation of poetry? Poetry is said to be a dead art. Poetry is said to be dying, you know? Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to know, even though I don't think it's all that important, but like the quote-unquote great poets of all time, which, in my theory, even William Shakespeare, even though he's not known for writing poems per se, but he's known for, like, I take that back. I'm not as educated as you are, and I know... I take that back. But my primary point is I see poetry in everywhere, whether the politic mm-hmm. is Oklahoma or whether the politic is New York City, I see poetry everywhere.
And okay, I got it. Thank you, my dear brother. I think you heard him, right? First of all, I don't have an office. I'm doing this thing, you know, like wherever. But I'm doing it in the city. And one of the major things that they want to do is to have a young poet laureate also, too, here, which is a very good idea. The second thing is that I intend to have... I was reading in a place called Amherst, where I used to teach up there some years, with Willie Kosasili from South Africa, who is the poet laureate of South Africa. And we traveled a couple of places reading as poet laureates because Kosasili was... in exile here during apartheid, in South Africa. My dear brother, my whole point is never to say that deny anyone to say anything he or she wants to say. Du Bois said years ago that all art is propaganda. Either you maintain the status quo or you talk about change. So then I can't, you know, a lot of poets that I read that I don't necessarily agree with, right? And I mean, and they're allowed to do it. I will have no authority to tell people what they can or cannot do. If you heard what I said at the beginning, I am going in the schools, not only here in Philadelphia, but all over. When I do a gig someplace, and, you know, you go to a university and they pay you for coming in, I'll ask the university, can you take me the next day to a high school? And I go. Now, every now and then, they take me to the worst high school on the planet Earth, right, you know, and you come on stage like this, and the kids are going like, who is she? What's she going to do? Huh? She's a poet. Oh, God, a poet. I mean, that's the audience you get, right, you know. So one reason why I walk the stage, because you walk the stage, you get their attention, you know. So I was in Detroit, and this young sister said, hey, weren't you on Monique's show? Play it, people. I say, yeah. You got to play it, right? Yeah, I thought so, because you got the same clothes on you had on there. You play it. I say, yeah, you know, poets don't make a lot of money, right? You know, I've been told that before. But the point is that I had their attention. And I read and told them what I wanted to tell them. And one of the things I told them is that how to be seditious. One of the messages I teach these high school students is how to be seditious. I define it. Or sometimes I tell them, pull out their dictionaries and look it up, right? But I said, you think if you curse out a teacher, you're seditious. I said, uh-uh, you just get taken to the principal's office, right? You think if you hit a teacher, you're seditious. I said, uh-uh, you get put out of school, right? Huh? I said, however, and then one of the students said to me, well, because they don't like us. I said, so what else is new? And then they said, you're the first person who's ever said that. Everyone always says, yes, they do. So what does that mean? That gives you the right to go and not pay attention and not learn and study? I said, I'm teaching you how to take over a class before the teacher knows he's taken over. They like that. No, they really do. They like that. They really do. You can run a class. You can make that teacher teach you. You can learn whatever. And you can get promoted and go on to the next grade. Isn't that interesting? Huh? Whatever. Instead of, you know, and I said, the other thing is that the first thing I have to do is teach you how to breathe. Because if I teach you how to breathe properly, you'll stay alive. If I teach you how to breathe properly, you do not then do an act, commit an act that you cannot take back as they cart you away someplace. No, simple things, not complex things. So y'all, you know, I've never listened to the brother, whatever, so I don't know whether he's a poet or not. And I don't know your definition of poetry, a poet or poetry. But what I do know is that most people do speak poetry. Most people do speak poetry, you know. And sometimes you listen, you look up and say, uh-huh. And then sometimes you listen, you say, oh, wow, that's a poem. And sometimes you say, uh-huh. And sometimes you say, yeah. And as the kids said, sometimes it's fat. And it be fat sometimes, you know. You know, but what I'm going to do is what I've been doing in the city of Philadelphia before I became poet laureate. I went into your schools and taught your children. You know that? Loved them. Told them when they were wrong. Because most people won't tell them when they're wrong. I did. I said, that's wrong. You know, what do you mean? In West Philadelphia, kids were talking about chasing somebody who was gay. I said, you know, in this area, I said, when I first moved to Philadelphia, I went and read the newspapers. That's how I learned about Philadelphia. Because no one's going to tell you about Philadelphia. But go and read the newspapers. Right? And I read and I read and I read. And I understood Philadelphia. It's the only way to understand it. From what was written in the papers, what had happened to people here. And then I could understand what was going on in my classroom sometimes, too. With students who were raised here in Philadelphia. So what you want to do at some point is truly to understand the need, the real need, to sometimes not just to say things to surprise people or to shock people, but to say things that will make people think, you know, not to say things that make people just to react, but to think and mull over it. And one of the reasons why I've been dealing, you know, with the haiku, when I told my publisher I wanted to do a collection of haiku, they said, oh, you don't have any longer poems. But if you've been reading me for years, you know, I always had haiku in there. I said, no. So I had 400, because I do one every morning. And they said, we cannot do 400 haiku. And my answer, why not? I mean, you read 400 pages of a novel. But anyway, they took what they could take. And that was it. And then we did a book. But the point of that book is to talk, begin a conversation with young people, okay, about poetry now. That everything we begin to write begins up here. And you can't hear it. Stay with me. You know. And everybody go, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm going to read next. And the thing about poetry, when you add a poetry slam, a poetry reading, wherever, is to listen to what the poet is saying before you. You know why? Because wherever they are, if they end up here, right, you're also going to continue that. But not with a scream, right? You're going to continue that information, that beauty. And all I'm saying is that it's an interesting country right now that allows us to scream. No, and does not allow us to work. Doesn't allow us to live sometimes in good places. It's a country that will now has taken away housing from the middle class and say live in buses or in cars, right? You know, it's a country that says to the young people, scream and stamp, whatever, but will not allow them to get a job after they have paid thousands of dollars for an education. It's a country that has no respect for the young or the elderly, but only that group that worked. And it's a country that is now saying to people, unions are no good. You're going to strike, I'm going to close down my plant and take it overseas. So people don't strike anymore. Students even told me once, right, that why would you belong to a union? Isn't that wild? I said, well, how much do you make? How much do you make? And they said, you know why you make that amount of money? I said, you make, because people someplace on this earth died for you to make that kind of money. Unions. And you're not saying, and the students said, well, they're crooked. I said, everybody, probably a lot of people are crooked. You know, so what? The point is that unions are important, are they not? You better believe it. There's a country that says now unions, you don't need unions. You know, they have programs now that says about, I don't know the name of it, but every now and you click the idiot box, right? And there is someone, a boss comes, and he's a good boss. What does that show, people? What is it called? Undercover boss. Can you imagine? Listen to that speech. Listen to that language, people. Undercover boss. And he ends up at the end, I'm told by students, of being a good guy, right? Because he'll send you and your family on a trip to Hawaii. So I said very gently, did he raise the pay of all the workers? Thank you, my dear brother. Anyone else? Okay. What's your name, my sister?
Good evening, Dr. Sanchez. My name is Jamie Wright.
Yes.
Thank you so much for your time and your vulnerability right now, your time of mourning. Mm. I pray you comfort.
Thank you.
I'm here with my class. My professor brought us here. Her name is Michelle Campbell.
What school?
And 1199C.
Oh, how wonderful.
We're underneath the union.
Yeah. 1199. I've spoken at 1199.
Nursing program.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm a writer.
Mm-hmm.
I write poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, how do I go forward with publication?
Mm-hmm.
And if at all possible, I would love to read one of my poems to you.
Sure.
Can I read it to
sure.
you?
Sure. Come up.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Professor.
That's my professor right there. This is for you, Dr. Sanchez.
Thank you, my
sis. Sis. It's called Sis. Sunshine was beaming brightly that summer sky. Jumping rope, skipping high. One potato, two potatoes, three potatoes pie. Tag, you're it. Nuh-uh, you lied. Time for church. Get tidied up and shoes shined. Sit next to me so we can make eyes and kick our feet. My sis, love sure can't be beat. Born in heaven, we made a pact. Though different mothers, our bond was greater yet. We knew it would be so with shared prayers. Together, we climbed life's challenging stairs. Hold my hand, sis, and don't let go. No matter the storm and winds that blow. Making it to the top with the kids and all. Bonds from the Creator never let us fall. When I become weak, you are strong. Amen, sis. Sing our song. Thank you.
Thank you, my sister. Thank you so very much. When you come outside, I'll give you one of the books. One of the things you want to do as a writer is read everybody writing on the planet Earth. Don't tell me you don't like that person. I just know what I ask you to do. I ask you to read every poet poeting to see what he or she is writing and saying and how they say it. Right. That's what you do. Okay. You know. So you can choose one of the books and it'll be my gift to you for sharing that. Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Hi, my name is Anna Lee Lipinski, and my question is for years ago, we know where you are and what you are now.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm curious, and I apologize, I'm ignorant of your beginnings. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, you had two strikes against you, a minority and a female. So how did you even think to start in this field, and how did you start?
Okay. I think we should probably stop calling all of us minorities. It's a nasty word, minority, you know? You know? And that's not to, for you, that's for, you know, how people, you know, I mean, the people, when they tag you minority, you just kind of like stay there, you know, a state of stasis. My dear sister, what's your name?
Adelaide.
Sister Adelaide, what I did is that I do believe poets are born, writers are born, artists are born, whatever. You do have to, you hopefully, you, at some point, work at it, you know, work at this craft. I was one of these little, I was a terrible little girl. Let me just say it, right? And as my father actually in the interview, someone came and interviewed my father before he made transition. He said, I don't know how she got to be that loud and saying all this stuff because she was the quietest child, you know? She never gave me any trouble. And I didn't. Because all I did, you know, when I was an ex-stutterer, but all I did, I went to school and I read. I would read every minute of the day, on the bed, on the couch, in the bathroom, it didn't matter where, you know, I read. So it's true, because there was nothing, there were only two things that happened. One, I wrote with my grandmother in a place called Alabama, right, where I was born, wrote these little ditties. When she died, I wrote a poem about her because they didn't let us go to the funeral, right? We were moved to a place called New York City when the family comes together, and I continued to write. I shared a tiny room with a sister who was the most beautiful person on the planet Earth. Can you imagine having a sister, beautiful, beautiful, and you like, for instance, Alabama. My grandmother was a head deaconess in the AME Zion Church. So every Saturday, all these old women would come, and they would snap beads and talk about stuff, right? One day, it was raining outside, so my sister said, let's play house, you know, with those little things. And I went, oh, God. So I played house with her, right? And one of the women said, oh, Patricia, she is so beautiful. She is so beautiful, just like her mother. And my mother was a really beautiful woman. And my sister raised her head for acknowledgement. And everybody there did it. Everybody did it, right? Whatever they look. And then someone said, and Sonia, what about Sonia? And I raised my head the way my sister did for acknowledgement. And someone said, and you got to hear this, because people will form you and or malform you at a very early age. They said, she's smart. She looks like her father and she's smart. And what did that tell me? It told me that I had to be smart. And I was that, and told my sister she had to be beautiful, which meant that the mind that she had, she never really developed. She was smarter than I. You gotta hear that. But she didn't have to, because she'd walk into a room and literally men would fall out. I'm serious. I kid you not. I mean, even at near the end of my sister's life, when we were at my father's house, and the older men were sitting there. My sister walked in and they all got up. You know how men get up and go and brush off whatever, you know. I'm coming in right behind my sister like, hi, how are you, you know. They said, there's a seat, Sonia. But I have a haiku in here for my sister that I never published until she died about beauty. The problem with beauty, if you don't protect beauty, people will violate beauty. Because people really don't like beauty. Not at all. And this is a poem that I did for my sister. It's called Sister Haku. One, how many secrets you carried in your panties? Infections of confections, no retractions. The autumnal rain announced a sister's fragrance. your slanted black eyes, smile crystals? Can two little girls holding hands walk unnoticed in a large house? Young man home from war envies the subtle paws of young beauty. Disguised as uncle, he picked at your unbroken spine. How to moisten the silence of an afternoon molestation. Silk on your skin, no armor for the amputee. Birmingham eyes ignoring the winter's confinement. To be born, to be raped, each journey a sudden wave. His touch wore you down to a fugitive eye. The sound of you sucking your thumb at night blows in my ears. All morning, our mother's voice beyond the hills. That's a haiku that I wrote for my sister that I never published while she was alive. But I think it's okay to publish it now. And, you know, she was that kind of beautiful child, you know, amazingly. And when I discovered as a young child that she had been molested, then I was no longer envious of her beauty. Thank you, my dear sister. And I always say to women, you ever know those beautiful women, they always, as they get older, and they lose that beauty, it's hard for them. But if you've never been beautiful, you don't have to worry about that, you know? Any other questions? Yes, my dear sister.
Since this young lady stepped out on a limb, I want to step out on a limb, too. My name is Yvonne Yon.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a poem, but I'm sorry, it's not directed towards you. But you mentioned earlier that you know Maya Angelou, and my poem is about her. Can you tell Maya to look at the poem on YouTube? Because I've tried sending a poem to Oprah, and I just wanted to hear it before she leaves this earth. It's a wonderful, lovely poem about Maya Angelou.
Well, why don't you, if you send it to me, I'll mail it to her. I'm going down there to visit her. I will take it to her.
Thank you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Last poem, question.
Can I please stand up? Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to take advantage of this moment, Sister Sanchez. I don't know if you remember me.
Yes, I do.
Because you have a profound place in my heart, and I wanted to say something to you before I left. You gave me a shower 100 years ago mm-hmm. for my baby, and Ray Mahari was my husband at the time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I'm in the process of doing his poetry on stage. I'm in the process of taking stuff from his book
mm-hmm.
and putting it on stage. He now has Alzheimer's. I don't know if you know that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He does. So I wanted to do something while he was still here.
Okay.
In that vein. So I just wanted to basically say hi, that I love you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad to see
you.
Haven't seen you in a long time.
Thank
you. And I want to say the same thing to my sister Pam Africa over here.
Yes.
It's interesting to have both of y'all in the same place at the same time. I'm also working on a book about those experiences during that time. So I will be in touch with you through Black and Nobel. Yeah,
okay.
So right in the crosshairs. I was going to stay on the bus and keep going because I'm cold and tired, but I said, let me stop here.
Thank you. Thank you for, it's a, what,
you.
Is, what is this? This is Wednesday?
Yes.
Thank you for coming out on a Wednesday for poetry. It is such a joy to see people here, you know, who come out to listen to poetry. And it's not like, you know, I do a poetry reading, it's about an hour, hour and a half, but this, during the book fair, they asked us specifically to do 30 minutes, and I was on time for 30 minutes, right? Right, you know. And then the Q&A, which I always do like, because, this is the place I came to live 30 years ago. This is my home now. Every time I go to New York, you know, and I say I live in Philadelphia, the people say, no, you don't. You're from New York. I said, no. You cannot live someplace for 30 years, you know, and not. I mean, I walk up in Germantown. I live in Germantown, right? And I walk up in Germantown, and it's only, well, that's not true in Harlem. It happens too. But in Germantown, people say, yo, Professor Sanchez, you know. Or when they made me poet laureate, I walked up in Germantown to go walk up to the bank, right? And the brothers, you know, who stand out and sell the things, they say, it's about time. You've been doing this forever in this city. It's about time. And I mean, I went from brother to brother to brother to brother to brother. But you know, the people are always ahead of city governments and state governments and federal governments, always, always. But I just want you to know that I will never embarrass you, Philadelphia. I never will. And someone said to me, well, you know, I made this statement, and someone from Philadelphia challenged me on this and said, well, you know, you wrote that poem about MOVE. I said, I did. I certainly did. I said, I had to. But I tell you something else. When MOVE happened, I was in a place, I was in a little town, you know, in Georgia, where you get off in Atlanta and take a little plane to Oshkosh, Georgia. And then they pick you up and drive you another hour, right? I had no idea where I was, except in Georgia, at that time, you could get CNN news, you know, whereas I wasn't getting CNN in Germantown yet, right? It's amazing, right? And I saw what was happening in Philadelphia. The next morning, I was doing keynote at 9 a.m. I was looking at 1,000 people. And as I got on stage, I knew that they probably were not going to listen to a bloody thing that I said. Because the moment they were very polite and they clapped and then Q&A. And they said, what kind of people live in Philadelphia? You got to hear that. And with bomb of civilian population. You know what I said? So I can't speak for the officials, but I can speak for the people. The people of Philadelphia were appalled and shocked. I'm serious. The people of Philadelphia said, you do not do this, whatever. And when I got back home on my answering service with my students, you know, and you know, your students do listen. They started, we do listen to you, Professor Sanchez, because someone said on the idiot box that this was the first time that this had happened. And my students call the ABC, NBC, CBS, says, oh no, the first time happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma. When I got back home, there was a call from WHYY, all the stations, saying, we had some calls from some students, we think, right? Who said, I said, that's correct. They said, well, do you have any factual knowledge, Professor Sanchez? I said, give me your fax number. I'll fax you the factual knowledge, right, you know. But when I came home also, my children had been in school, and because they took a position that no one has a right to drop, you know, on the civilian population, that they were literally booed. And I was going to a place called Oslo, Norway, for a poetry festival with Octavio Paz and Jimmy Baldwin and a bunch of people. And I started off the conference by reading, right? We were at the waterfront, and they had built this structure where it was like, you know, have you ever been in Boston where that church where people like Frederick Douglass and all them, they spoke at that church, and it's like a boat. Same thing, kind of thing. And I did, the next day, I gave a talk, and they said, we want to interview you for the documentary we're doing. And the first question they asked me is, what kind of people live in Philadelphia that would drop a bomb on the civilian population? So for 1 year, wherever I travel, from the University of Chicago, I went there next, right, with a professor who was really dapper, who stood up and asked that same question. And he said, and if you had answered otherwise, I was going to take my whole class out of here, Professor Sanchez. I walked a line for us as a people. I said, we are human beings living in a place called Philadelphia. We did not do that. We, the people. You understand, we, the people? I love that, we, the people. Three words, we the people. We the people did not do that. We the people did not do that. But officials did that. All the way from commissioners, right? And this is the cinematographer said to me, if you had not responded in this way, Professor Sanchez, we were going to walk out of here.
That's why. That's how I travel for 1 year. Because we are the people. We didn't do that. We understand that. So thank you for coming out. I'm going to go autograph some books before Laura, you know, where, upstairs? Yeah. And don't forget, you come for your book, my dear sister. Thank you for coming out tonight. I have a watch someplace that's not mine, right?
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.